Looking for a new 1500 Silverado? Shop Beatty Chevrolet and get 2.9% APR for 72 months on a new 1500 Silverado. Or if you want a new vehicle and a Chevy Equinox LT fits your lifestyle, check out Beatty Chevrolet's lease option on a 24 Equinox for only $325 a month. And as always, buy with confidence with the Beatty Warranty for Life. Beatty Chevrolet on Parkside Drive. Online at BeattyChevrolet.com. Beatty Chevrolet, locally owned and operated for over 90 years.
Good Wednesday afternoon. Welcome in to Josh and Swain. Thank you for being with us today. We are excited to be with you. Today is a big day, Jason Swain. We are Juwan Jennings, Kelly Washington, Carl Pickens, days away, 2 weeks from tomorrow. Tennessee kicks off the season against Ball State. We are getting closer.
Shout out to Sinclair Cannon.
Yes.
From South Carolina, who I hosted on his visit as well. So he was 15 when I played. Big shout out to Sinclair.
Who did you miss on as a host?
Patrick Turner.
Oh, that's right.
Dude, I was set up to fail from the beginning. Let me tell you how much a VFL I really am.
Okay.
So Patrick Turner was being recruited by USC. This is when USC was really, really good, okay?
I remember this recruitment very well.
Patrick Turner from Nashville, Tennessee. He came during the time when the students were gone. Guess where I was? Huntsville, Alabama. I was at home. So my man Gerald Harrison, who's now the AD at Austin Peay, calls me and said, hey, man, we need your help. Do you mind hosting Patrick Turner? I was like, but I'm home. In Huntsville. I know. So you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm tired of being here anyways. So me and a friend of mine, high school friend, came up, took Patrick Turner out, had a good time. For some reason, he didn't have pants or jeans or something. So I let him borrow some jeans. We went out. The best way I knew how to show him a good time, considering no students was on campus. And we had a good time. I had a real, real good time. And ultimately, he went to USC, but I struck out on Patrick Turner. But I was set up to fail from the beginning. During the visit, he got a phone call from a current college wide receiver. That current college wide receiver was Mike Williams, USC. It's like, dude, there's no way you're coming to Tennessee. You're taking phone calls from Mike Williams, who's at USC. So he went to USC, didn't work out. So I missed out on Patrick Turner.
Well, when he was visiting USC, did he get any calls from Jason Swain or Robert Meacham?
No. No. Nope. Mm-mm. Listen, I'm going to host you on your visit. I'm going to do my best to tell you how great a place this is, how we want you. But after you leave here, I'm like calling you up, stalking you. You're either coming or you're not. This is Tennessee, man. We don't beg, okay?
Okay. Well, might want to. Look at Alabama and Georgia. We're going to go over this top 50 list.
I'm talking about 2004. That's when it occurred. So we wasn't in begging stage at that moment.
That 05 class was loaded that Tennessee signed. Some panned out, some didn't. But you're not wrong about that. Was USC where it's Mike Williams, it's Dwayne Jarrett. It's every year there's a top 10 wide receiver that's coming out.
Yeah. Yeah,
and their program was rolling. So that told you where his mindset was, even while he was visiting Knoxville, where there was, of course, pressure. Patrick was from Nashville, was a big-time in-state prospect.
And it wasn't like he decided to go to Alabama or Georgia or somewhere like that. He wanted to leave home.
Rivals ranked him the number 2 overall player in the country.
Yeah, I don't know about that one.
Yeah, he was overranked. He played in the NFL. He was a good player.
Yeah.
Derek Williams, who went to Penn State, was number 1. Eugene Monroe, offensive tackle, number 3. Melvin Alaze, don't really remember him, went to Maryland. And then Ray Maluga, linebacker, went to USC.
Yeah, but PT was cool, man. We had a good time. Mm-hmm.
Look, there's a ton of pressure. When we talk about guys, you're trying to get them to leave the state of Georgia, the state of Florida. That was Patrick Turner, who was in the state of Tennessee. Tennessee's trying to hold on. USC came calling. He wanted to go out to USC.
He wanted to leave home. Like, that's what I remember. He wanted to leave and get out. And I respect that. I understood that. But at the end of the day, I was like, hey, man, it's your loss, not mine. Whatever. I was glad to leave Huntsville. I was tired of being at home. So It was a win-win.
Okay.
But that's how much of a VFL I really am.
The dedication was there from Jason Swain.
Just saying.
All right, we'll rank the wide receivers who wore number 15 on today's show. We'll see if we can figure that out. I don't think that's a good idea. But number one in most fans' hearts, I think, would be Juwan Jennings, but it can be by generation as well.
Carl Pickens.
Two weeks from tomorrow, that's going to be number one by most wide receivers' standards. Is that Joey's GOAT? We talked about this recently, but that's Joey Kent's GOAT.
Yeah, I call Joey Kent the GOAT. Every time I see him or text with him, I call him a GOAT. And I know he gets uncomfortable. He doesn't like it.
Yeah.
That's why I do it anyways. His GOAT is Carl Pickens. So if the GOAT says the real GOAT's Carl Pickens, that should be everyone's GOAT.
Yep, the GOAT's GOAT. That would be Carl, and it's going to be difficult to argue.
Yep.
2 weeks from tomorrow, Tennessee plays against Ball State. We're getting close to you kind of turn the page from camp to the start of the season's right around the corner. How close is that to happening? It is a Ball State game. Then you have Pitt 9 days later.
Oh, yeah, we do play Ball State. Just ready to get out there and hit somebody that, not your roommate, someone that you don't see every day, someone that does not wear the same color as you. Just good to go out there and play in front of your fans and kind of show the world what you've been working on. Individually, this is a great opportunity to say, okay, you know, these are the gains I've made over the last 6, 7, 8 months, whether I want to lose weight, gain weight, get stronger, work on my technique, be a little bit quicker. I have a better understanding of the offense, of the defense, and I want to show the world, and more importantly, show myself that I have improved and ready to make this next step to help the team.
So Ball State, the opener. You want to go ahead and dive in? There's this idea you play a team like Ball State. So instead of opening up like you guys did against Cal, where it's a Pac-10 at the time opponent, and you know it's going to be a fierce battle, Ball State is one where Tennessee is going to be favored by more than 30 points. So there's this idea, okay, well, you get ready for the game, but you're really getting ready for Pitt, so you save the good stuff for week two when you go play the ACC team. Don't show it against Ball State. When that idea is thrown out for a soft opener, what do you think?
I got a lot of thoughts. This narrative that Tennessee is hiding the good stuff, the good plays, in some special cupboard, in some safe in Josh Heupel's office, and the key doesn't come out until the Pittsburgh week, that's false. That always gets brought up every year at the beginning of the season, especially when you play a team like Ball State. It's false. You're not saving the good stuff against Pitt. Different teams run different schemes. Different teams have different personnel groupings, different depth, talent pool. It would be one thing if you played 12 games and every team that you played ran the same offense, same defense, and you knew what you're going to face because it was the same thing for 12 weeks straight. Yeah, you would say some stuff for teams that were more talented, right? But Ball State is not going to run the same defense as Pitt. Ball State doesn't have the same players as Pitt. Let's take an easy slant route pattern, a 5-yard, 45-degree angle cut off 1 foot. There's so many different ways defenses play that. You can run that versus cover two zone. You can run that versus man. You can run that versus cover three, which is off coverage. Depending on the defense that you play will determine, okay, I know that slant has to come faster versus this opponent versus a different opponent versus different coverage. If you play in a defense who are very aggressive in reacting to the slant, now you know against Pitt or Florida that you can hit them with a slant and go. Juwan Jennings, 2016, against Tease Tabor. The normal route is just a slant, but the slant and go is a reaction based on what you've seen from film saying, okay, they're overplaying the slant. We can beat them with the slant and go. But you didn't say, oh, man, we're going to save the slant and goes. We're not going to run those against Ball State. We're going to run them just for Florida. No, because Ball State may not be aggressive on slants. They may be off in coverage. They may let you catch those and just tackle you after you catch them. So this notion that oh, you're saving the good stuff for later, is false. We ran a double pass against Florida my senior year. The reason why we didn't run a double pass against Cal, because it wasn't there. I scored a touchdown against Cal. I didn't do anything special. I appreciate the highlights. I appreciate people say, oh, man, I love that game, man. I didn't do anything special. The person who did the best job was Coach Cut and Ainge. They threw the ball. The offensive line blocked. I did nothing. All I had to do was run in a straight line. The reason why it was so open is because Coach Cutcliffe saw on film from the previous year that when you line a receiver up in a slot and then you motion out a running back to the same side outside of that receiver, they have a hard time shifting and being responsible for guarding the slot vertical, which I was. Coach Cut saw that from the previous year. That's why we ran it. So we didn't pull out the good stuff in game one. We just reacted to what they showed us they were vulnerable at on film. That's the way it works. In 4 years of Tennessee, not one offensive meeting where Coach Sanders or Coach Cut was like, all right, guys, close your eyes. Close your eyes. I'm about to bring out the good stuff. Here it comes. We're playing Alabama this week. Close your eyes. Here comes the good stuff. No, we didn't do that. Not one time we didn't do that. So it's made up. It's make-believe. It's a fake narrative. You're going to run screen passes. Josh Heupel in this offense, this is what they do. There's two receivers on one side or three receivers on one side. Hendon Hooker's going to get the ball. He's going to raise up. He's going to throw it out to the flats, to the receiver. It don't matter if it's Florida, Ball State, Pittsburgh, Vanderbilt, Kentucky. That's what we do. Depending on what the defense does and reacting to it will determine if we're going to pump fake and throw it over your head or pump fake and throw it somewhere else. But we'll see that. We'll see that and go, oh, man, Heupel, he brought the good stuff out today. No, he didn't. He didn't bring the good stuff out. He just reacted to what the defense was doing. So when you're watching Pitt, when you're watching Ball State, and it's 49-0, don't go, oh, hold on now. Don't give away too much of the good stuff. Don't save some of those points for next week's. No. Score 80. Okay? They can't stop you. Keep scoring. There's more good stuff for next week. We're not running out. All right. It's not supply and demand. All right, we good. We got some more of that where it came from.
Shelf's empty after Ball State.
Yeah, we good. We got some more of that, all right? So that whole narrative, man, just it blows my mind each and every year.
There are too many good teams you play, too, right? Because then the idea would be, well, if you can't save it for – you can't hold off against Pitt, so then you've just blown your cover for Florida 2 weeks later. So when do you start using the good stuff?
Close your eyes.
You're playing the SEC.
Close your eyes. I got a surprise for you guys. We're going to bring out the good plays this week. Oh, man.
Slant and Go shows up in mid-October. Yeah. I like it.
Why didn't they bring that out early in the year? Well, because it wasn't there early in the year. Jim, that's why.
All right, that's good for everybody to know. We'll probably have to repeat in the next 2 weeks. We invite you to join us, 865-656-9900. Your calls and text. You can call or text the show, 865-656-9900. Tennessee football looking ahead, looking back in recruiting as well today on Josh and Swain on 99.1, the Sports Animal. Right here on Josh and Swain, thank you for being with us. Big guest lineup today. We are going to talk to Austin Price of AllQuest at 1:30. Tennessee has added two commitments to the 23 class since we last talked to Austin last week. We'll talk to him at 1:30, 2 o'clock. Chris Lowe of ESPN.com will join the show as he is a part of the SEC preview that came out at ESPN.com yesterday. And then 2:30, Braden Gall, 440 Sports, will join us. On Josh and Swain, you can join us at 865-656-9900 as we say hello to Rocky. Rocky, good afternoon. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind today?
Well, I was a big fan of Swain, and you guys probably know me. I've been to plenty of live remotes, and I wear my hat that I'm a veteran, and airborne infantry. But I want to say, it was good to hear Swain's recruitment, because Clark Duncan, when he was recruited by UT, I was recruited. And I told him to go to Clark and look at him. Rocky. And Clark just threw him a different avenue that I couldn't reach.
Well, Clark Duncan is a man, Rocky. And man, thank you so much for your service and the love, man. Really, really appreciate you listening. Clark Duncan retired now. He still looks like he can play. He's Tennessee through and through. Rocky, thanks so much for the phone call, man. Really, really appreciate it.
We do appreciate it, Rocky. You can call or text 865-656-9900. JJ texted in, Swain, number one, your humility is as awesome as it gets. Just started listening to you, maybe that.
Yeah, it depends on what day of the week it is.
Yeah. you should work with Swain.
I'm just kidding. I appreciate that.
Yeah, you did special things for the Vols, JJ notes, and appreciates the help, I believe, in recruiting. So, like that 05 class, you didn't get Patrick Turner. Got LaMarcus Coker. We were going through class.
Yeah, got Coker.
And as you mentioned, he didn't leave Tennessee till after you left, so as long as you were at Tennessee, things were good.
That's right, man. He was on straight and narrow when I was here.
Yep. So you're welcome, says the humble Jason Swain. Let's get Bobby next on Josh and Swain. Hey, Bobby, good afternoon. What's on your mind today?
Boy, it is almost football time, Swain.
You smell it?
Yeah, I can smell it. I can see it right now. The white of the helmet with the power tee orange on the side. Guys running out of the tee. Well, I am excited. Swain, I want to get your opinion, brother.
Okay.
Everybody's going around saying, you know, we're going to be 10-2, all this. I want to get your realistic opinion. Do you see us going 10-2, or do you see us going 8-4 and a possible bowl win?
More 8-4 than 10-2. You know, I don't see it. I mean, to go 10-2, you probably will have to lose to – what, just Alabama and Georgia? I mean, the LSU game is going to be tough. The Pittsburgh game is going to be tough. This team will be good. This team will fight for each other. This team will be well coached. They'll play fast. They'll make plays on offense. But there's still deficiencies this year like it was last year. And hopefully no one gets hurt. But this looks like a 8-9 win team. When I watch them during the scrimmage, it does not look like a 10-win team right now. Now, that doesn't mean that they can't go win 10 games. I'm just telling you what it looks like just watching them practice. So I hope I'm wrong. I hope they win every game, but I don't see 10 wins.
Mr. Swain, if you do go in before the Florida game and talk to them boys, I want to be there.
All right, they don't need me. They don't need me. It's probably not a good idea anyways, because it would not be able to be recorded and posted on any type of website. So.
Yeah, Vol football Twitter account's going to walk in and say, we can't really do anything with this.
Yeah, we can't post this.
This is not going to social.
Yeah. So
no, I want to be there when you go in that locker room, because the way you talk, brother, and did you get me all excited? I'm ready to go put on the pads myself and go crack somebody. You know what I mean?
Let's go, Bobby. Let's get it, man.
Let's go.
All right,
I'll go
Bobby.
Out there with him.
All right, Bobby.
Thank you, Bobby.
Don't get in trouble, Bobby. Don't be getting arrested or anything.
Yeah,
we got to get Josh to bail you out.
I joke about you do the math, cut out the weekends and Fridays and game week, but still 15 days. So you got to pace yourself for the next 2 weeks.
Well, we can't do what the players do. Okay, the players can go out there and hit people.
Yeah.
We do that. It's assault. Okay,
right.
So Bobby, you can't do what Jeremy Banks is going to do here in a couple of weeks. All right, but I appreciate the excitement and the enthusiasm, man. That's what makes Tennessee different, sets us apart from a lot of programs out there in the country.
We have a text from Logan saying, I think Tennessee should play slow against Ball State and play fast against Pitt. Don't want to show Pitt too much. That's Logan Ward on the text line. We appreciate it.
Yeah, man. We should huddle up against Ball State, milk the play clock all the way down to about 2 or 3 seconds, mm-hmm. and then Pitt will never know what hit him because it's not like Pat Narduzzi went up against Josh Heupel a time or two before last year.
That's right. You think they'll play Tillman? You just save him?
No, just Hendon, you just sit on out. You know, you let Tillman just take the day. Jeremy Banks, you take the day. You know, we got to save the good stuff now. Save the good stuff for Pitt.
Yeah, I'm on Logan's side on this, no matter what was said in the first segment of today's show. 15 days to go. People are getting antsy, getting closer. We'll continue the discussion. 865-656-9900. Tennessee, by the way, Ball State's game number one, but multiple games on ESPN's must-watch list. How about that?
I got to put that on my calendar, man. Hold on, let me do that right now.
September 1?
Yeah, I got to put that on my calendar. Ball State. We play Ball State first.
It's a night game.
Oh, it's already out there. Who put that on my calendar? Huh. Because I had Pitt on my calendar. I didn't have Ball State. I'm sorry.
I've only filled out September 1st. I haven't started filling out past that. Because the only game that matters is the next one.
I keep forgetting. Listen, Tennessee, you better lose to Ball State because Ball State will be using my comments as motivation. Don't make me wrong, all right? Take care of business. We don't want to see a Georgia State scenario.
Jason Swain is on to Pitt September 10th. It's going to be here soon. We'll come back here on Josh and Swain on 99.1, the Sports Animal. Thank you for being with us here on Josh and Swain. Search Josh and Swain anywhere you listen to podcasts. If you want to go back and listen, you miss any show, you don't have to. You can find us on the WNML app or anywhere you listen to podcasts like Apple, Spotify, Amazon, you name the podcast platform. Just search Josh and Swain. You will find us there. If you go to ESPN.com, you'll see the SEC preview that was put out by Chris Lowe and Alex Scarborough. We'll talk to Chris coming up at 2 o'clock on today's show. They power rank the SEC. Alabama's number one, Georgia's number two, then Texas A&M, Arkansas, Kentucky, and Tennessee. Kentucky being one spot ahead of Tennessee might stand out to you. If you scroll down and see their five must-see games this season, Swain, two of those include Tennessee. Tennessee against Florida September 24th, and then Tennessee against Kentucky in Knoxville as well October 29th.
It's that Tennessee offense people want to see.
Tennessee is much more must-see than just a couple of years ago.
Yeah, people like offense. People like points being scored, and Tennessee certainly is one of the best teams in the country at doing that and was last year. The Florida game, I don't know, man. I think it depends on what happens in that Utah game. Did you see the SEC Network guys talking about Florida's prediction with their win-loss record?
Could be a tough go.
6-6.
Mm-hmm.
If they lose to Utah, look terrible, I think it takes away a little bit of that shine for the Tennessee-Florida game. But if they win that game against a really, really good Utah team, Tennessee beats Pittsburgh, okay. All right. Yeah, this will be one of the premier games, I think, in college football that weekend. And then Tennessee-Kentucky, absolutely. Y'all give credit to Stoops and what he's doing with his program. You know they're going to be more united this year than probably any year, seeing what's going on between Coach Kyle and Stoops. And the last couple of years, this game has been close, except for when they beat the brakes off of us a couple of years ago and Pruitt's last season here. But last year was close when they abandoned their pro-style offense and went straight wildcat option that one year. That was a close game. So it's been really, really, really good games between Tennessee and Kentucky. So no reason to think that it won't be this year as well.
Yeah, what they pointed out here is that Kentucky has been really consistent under Mark Stoops. He's done a good job with the program. How could you argue that? But also note Stoops is just 2-7 against Tennessee, and this late October clash in Knoxville could go a long way toward establishing who is best equipped to challenge Georgia in the SEC East. Ultimately, it may be that nobody can really challenge Georgia, but to be that second-best team. Now, you might see Kentucky being one spot ahead of Tennessee in the power rankings, and Kentucky was picked ahead of Tennessee in the East. Head-to-head will only go so far. Last year, Tennessee beat Kentucky, right, head-to-head.
Mm-hmm.
But Kentucky still had the advantage record-wise because the schedule is an advantage for Kentucky. That would be the difference there in the SEC East conversation. Kentucky plays Ole Miss and Mississippi State this year. Tennessee plays Alabama and then LSU on the road. So you'd prefer to have Kentucky's schedule, right, compared to Tennessee's.
Kentucky's schedule is softer as Noah's diaper. Ain't no doubt about that.
Well, here lately, but yeah, I see what you're saying.
It is soft. It is. It's not the toughest. Now, we saw this play out a couple of years ago when James Franklin was the coach at Vanderbilt. Excuse me. Vanderbilt. When they won seven games and they went to the bowl game. And it looked like, man, Vanderbilt so much better. And yes, they were. But man, the scheduling had a lot to do with kind of the narrative of the Vanderbilt football program. And I think for Kentucky, yes, they're better. Yes, they don't trip over themselves like they did back in the day pre-Stoops. But let's not get ahead of ourselves and think like they're going through the gauntlet here with their scheduling. It's not that tough. It's not that difficult. But they are a better program.
Right. This is not easy, per se, but here's Kentucky's schedule leading up to playing Tennessee in Knoxville. And Kentucky has an off week before coming to Knoxville. So the schedule for Kentucky before the Tennessee game, Miami, Ohio, at Florida week two, that'll be a big game. Youngstown State, Northern Illinois, at Ole Miss, South Carolina at home, Mississippi State at home, and then an off week before coming to Knoxville. What game in there scares you? None, right?
No,
so it doesn't mean it's easy because those are SEC teams you're playing, but that is a very manageable schedule if you're a top 20 to top 25 team, which Kentucky is preseason.
Yeah, you look at that slate of games and then go compare that to Tennessee's middle of the schedule, four or five in a row. Totally different.
Yeah, now Tennessee does get to host UT Martin the week before Kentucky, so you know that's a game where you don't show much, obviously. But before that, Tennessee will have played Florida at home, at Pitt, Alabama, and LSU on the road.
Yeah.
There's a big difference.
It's a difference.
Yeah, big difference.
It's different. But if you lose to Kentucky, there's nothing that I'm going to say. There's nothing that we can say as a fan base about, well, I mean, at least we play a tougher schedule. It don't matter.
Oh, 100%.
They beat you.
Got to win the game. Got to win the game.
They beat you.
Yep.
It doesn't matter who play a tougher schedule or not. So, like, for instance, we play Purdue in the bowl game. Oh, you play in the Big Ten. It's weak. It don't matter. They beat you. Oh, Clemson. It don't matter. Like, if you don't win the head-to-head, all the bragging rights and talking about how weak the other team's schedule is, it goes out the window. You got to take care of business in the head-to-head.
Tennessee can't have a losing streak at home against Kentucky. You can't have back-to-back losses in Knoxville against the Wildcats.
Ah, we all right. I don't think our quarterbacks will throw three or four interceptions like the last group did.
Be best not to.
Yeah, so I think we all right.
We did get this question on the text box asking about Tennessee, Georgia, the SEC East. Outside of Georgia that's predicted to win the division, who else, in your opinion, would win the East and go to the SEC championship? Would you say Tennessee's the highest upside in that conversation, or would you say Kentucky because of the schedule we just went over?
I mean, I think if you look at the schedule and then you look at the roster with the X's and O's and the depth, I mean, on paper, Kentucky is the second-best team in the East, on paper. But you mentioned the record that Stoops has against Tennessee. It's not great at all. And in two of his 10-win seasons, he's lost to Tennessee. So you have to throw out his roster. You have to throw out how long he's been there, the stability. You have to throw it out when it comes to Tennessee because he just hasn't been successful against Tennessee as you would think someone who has won two 10-win seasons in the last four seasons, while Tennessee has been kind of tripping over ourselves in the last four seasons. So it's going to come down between Tennessee and Kentucky threatening Georgia. Now, I think South Carolina's going to be better than what people expect. I think South Carolina has the best tight end room outside of Georgia. And I think Spencer Rattler is going to be a whole lot better than he was at Oklahoma. And their running game is going to be good because you know Montero Harsey is going to coach him up and they'll be good. Receiver is going to be the big question and probably the issue for South Carolina. They got to find some playmakers on the outside. And I know they went to the portal and were really busy because this offseason, while Carolina was in the portal, I mean, our fans were like, oh, hold on now. Our neighbor's getting a new car. It's time for us to get a new car. And we were kind of looking over the fence at South Carolina, adding people, and we were wondering kind of why we're not doing the same. So they've added players, for sure. but I still think they're behind Tennessee, but they'll be a whole lot better. But at the end of the day, it comes down, I think, to Tennessee and Kentucky having the best chance to really challenge and threaten Georgia.
Two of the five must-see games in the SEC, according to Chris Lowe and Alex Scarborough, Tennessee at home against Florida and Tennessee at home against Kentucky. We'll talk to Chris Lowe coming up at 2 o'clock on today's show. Austin Price at 1:30. Coming up next, the face-off. Five tough questions from Joel Silverberg. He sets us up when we come back on Josh and Swain on 99.1 The Sports Animal. Josh and Swain right here on 99.1 The Sports Animal. Face-off coming up in just a few minutes. You'll hear from Mike Eckler, defensive coach and special teams coach, coming up at the start of the 1 o'clock hour. We'll talk a little bit about punt return. Got to replace Velus Jones, not just a wide receiver, but back there in the return game, too.
What do you think will happen if we get caller Bobby in a room with Mike Eckler?
Oh, boy. Remember Mike Eckler with the blood streaming down?
Oh, yeah.
You'll have two of those walking out.
Oh, yeah. Chili will be hot.
Strewn across that room.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah. Got to replace Velus Jones. He's going to be the most difficult player to replace, in my opinion, out of everyone who went to the draft. I think Matthew Butler is second. But, again, I've said this before. Y'all probably tired of hearing it. But I'll say it again for those who have not heard it. But Velus impacted in two phases of the game, special teams and at wide receiver. And Velus was the kick returner and the punt returner. And you're going to hear – a little bit later, why Velus will be very, very hard to replace.
Big show still ahead. Austin Price, Chris Lowe, Braden Gall. We have Benchmark Physical Therapy back with us. So we have injury reports we'll keep you up to date on every week. We'll do that this afternoon on Josh and Swain. And right now, we hit today's face-off.
You want some? Come get some.
Head to head, toe to toe. Let's go one-on-one with today's face-off.
But to be the man, you gotta beat the man.
Are you ready?
Let's get this mother crock.
Joel, what do you have for us today?
First-round rookie wide receiver Jameson Williams switched his jersey number to 9 as a courtesy. He reached out to Rams quarterback Matthew Stafford. Was this necessary?
Wasn't necessary at all. Last time I checked, Matthew Stafford is not playing for the Lions. He is still playing in the league. He is not retired. He plays for the Rams. But it is pretty cool for Jameis Williams to do that. But not necessary at all. I thought it was a little weird, actually, when I heard it. But that's just out of respect to Matthew Stafford. It means so much to that organization and to that city.
Yeah, I would just classify it as classy, respectful, completely unnecessary, but sometimes you do the unnecessary move because you think it's the right move. So Stafford plays for the Rams. I don't know, are they retiring it in the future in Detroit? I wouldn't think so. So unnecessary, but well done.
ESPN ranked Alabama edge rusher Will Anderson the top player in the country. Any issue with a defensive player ranking number one?
Last time I checked, defensive players are part of the game. This is not 7-on-7. This is 11-on-11. And defensive players are just as important as offensive players. And if he's the best player, he's the best player. And he is. I'll have a bigger issue if he plays the way he played last season and doesn't get an invite to New York and actually win the Heisman.
Yeah, I think it's going to be rare that you can really make a case against a quarterback for the Heisman just because of the importance of the position and these numbers that they're going to be able to put up. Will Anderson would be one of those examples you can come up with, especially on the defensive side. He's an unfair player, so I think he's the right choice. I think it's difficult to choose between Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud at quarterback, so Will Anderson, to me, is the right choice.
Yeah, this is a problem for me because I'm tired of quarterbacks just getting it because they play quarterback. Mm-hmm. Like, give it to the best player. And this year, the best player so happens to be an Alabama player who's on defense. But I do want the streak to be broken and narrative to be crushed. I just don't want an Alabama player winning the Heisman.
What is a non-Tennessee SEC game that's a must-watch this season?
Non-Tennessee SEC game. I mean, you got to go with the Notre Dame-Ohio State game. Marcus Freeman played at Ohio State. He was on radio trying to throw a little shot, whether it was unintentionally or not, about the education of Ohio State and how, hey, man, you know, they don't really force you to go to class up there. I would know. Oh, really? and had to kind of walk back those words. That, to me, off the bat, is the most intriguing game so far on the first month of the season.
So I was kind of thinking SEC game that doesn't include Tennessee.
It is a SEC game, didn't it?
It did, but that's okay. Like Alabama, Texas A&M kind of comes to mind, but I think Alabama's going to whip them.
You know what's about to happen.
Yeah, so
you know what's about to happen.
It's a rivalry game, but I'm intrigued by Ole Miss, Mississippi State with the Leach Kiffin factor. We see it every year. So if you're saying, hey, that's too easy of a game to choose, I get it.
I got one for you. How about Kentucky football against Kentucky basketball? Where's that game being played? Is that on Ocho? Is that pay-per-view? When they playing that game? I can't wait to tune into that one.
What if they did some kind of competition between Calipari and Stoops, like in Billy Madison, where you did an all-event deal?
That would be great.
Physical events, then you have some academic events. I would like to see that between Cal and Stoops.
Happy 79th birthday to Robert De Niro. What is your top De Niro movie?
I mean, come on. It's Goodfellas. It's for me, that's the one that stands out the most. There's some good ones, other good ones though, where he was, you know, granddad, meet the parents, and had Ben Stiller all nervous and stuff. That was good too, but I'll go with Goodfellas. It's a classic.
So that's not a bad choice at all. That would be top two or three for me.
Okay.
For sure.
All right.
But I'm going to go Godfather 2.
Okay.
And part of it is I prefer Godfather 2 over Goodfellas. I almost think of Goodfellas as Ray Liotta plus the others as well, in terms of that's his movie. But I would go Godfather 2, favorite Robert De Niro movie.
What about Taxi Driver?
Ranks very high.
You talking to me? Huh? You talking to me?
That would be in the top 2 to 4 range.
Gotcha.
Was Aaron Rodgers wrong for calling out the young receivers the way he did?
Aaron Rodgers has a history of displaying some poor leadership. There's been former teammates of Aaron Rodgers who have publicly stated that this is not his strong suit. And now he is throwing his young receivers under the bus. It's a way to do it. And Aaron Rodgers was really specific about who did what wrong and exactly what they did wrong. So I don't think this is going to benefit Aaron Rodgers in the long run. So, no, not a good move.
Aaron Rodgers is a great all-time quarterback. He's one of the best quarterbacks of all time. There's no question about that. But this is why I still have him a step behind Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning. While they're going to have issues with their guys, I think that's going to be expressed more privately than publicly. And we've had too many instances of sometimes veteran quarterbacks that have left and said, yeah, you know, not the easiest to play with Aaron. A lot of pressure on these young guys. Let's see if this is the right way to get them in line, because replacing Davante Adams is a big ask for some of these young guys who are probably more talented and have more potential than the veterans that Aaron Rodgers seems to prefer right now.
All right, Josh gets the win. That third question was kind of difficult because, like, the traditional SEC non-Tennessee games, they don't have the same luster as they normally do. Like, LSU and Florida are both replacing coaches. The Iron Bowl, like, might be a blowout. I mean, it was a close game last year, but just don't know what the deal is going to be with Brian Harsin at Auburn this year. Like, the Egg Bowl might be the answer.
A lot of good ones coming up. A&M, let's see if they're ready, because Will Anderson said we'll settle it on the field.
I mean, that's going to be the game everyone's going to pay attention to, and there's going to be a lot of media hype surrounding that game, but we know what's about to happen. Mm-hmm. We know what's about to happen. So, Ole Miss, Mississippi State is going to be a good one for sure. Arkansas LSU is going to be good, I think.
I like that pick.
I think it's going to be good too. But I like Kentucky football versus Kentucky basketball. That's my pick.
By the way, I was just trying to force some kind of different opinion on Robert De Niro, because here are the tomato meter scores with the movies we mentioned. Goodfellas, 96. Godfather 2, 96. Taxi Driver, 96. The audience score for Goodfellas and Godfather 2, both 97. Equal in so many eyes.
Sounds like there's not really a wrong option when it comes to a De Niro movie.
Not at all.
Raging Bull, 94. He's got a nice collection there. 79. Happy birthday to Robert De Niro.
What about Meet the Fockers? What'd they get?
See. So, you know, comedies, I think, typically, I mean, it got an 84, Meet the Parents. That's really good for a comedy.
Oh, yeah.
Comedies, I think, have to fight for the higher scores. 84 is quite the compliment.
For all you fellas who had to meet your lady's dad for the first time, you can understand how difficult that is.
Meet the Fockers got a 38. That's too low. It was really good, too.
That's bad.
All right, that is the face-off. I'll take the win there. It is presented by Marble City Family Chiropractic. Get rid of aches and pains in a natural way with Drs. Jason and Alicia Bloom at Marble City Family Chiropractic. You can set up a one-on-one consultation today by calling 766-2081 for Marble City Family Chiropractic. We'll come back here on Josh and Swain. 2 hours to go. A lot of football talk coming up. Special teams, Mike Eckler. Make sure your chili's hot when we come back on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.